Ross Gregory Douthat is a reporter, researcher at the Atlantic Monthly and a member of the Harvard class of 2002. And yet his book, Privilege, Harvard, and the Education of the Ruling Class, criticizes what he sees as the failings of his alma mater. The book is published by Hyperion. I'm very pleased it has brought Mr. Douthat to my show today. Hello.
Hello. Glad to be here.
To borrow a phrase from Thomas Frank, what's the matter with Harvard?
Well, where to begin? I guess the first thing I'd say is that many of the things that people know and assume to be true about Harvard are in fact true, that it's a school filled with brilliant students and brilliant faculty, and it's fantastically wealthy and powerful, and it's a wonderful place to get for yourself, I guess you might say, an education during your 4 years.
It's also a nice thing to have on your resume.
And it is a very nice thing.
When people
thing
look
to have
at my resume and they see the undistinguished college I went to, they don't say, Brooklyn College.
Hmm. Yeah. But the fact that it's such a nice thing to have on your resume, I think, gets to the heart of what's the matter with Harvard, to be Thomas Frankian about it, which is that the school, and this isn't just Harvard, it's most elite schools today, and the whole culture of elite education has become so obsessed with the culture of achievement for achievement's sake, of resume building, of sort of moving on to the next step on the ladder of life, that the educational mission of the school suffers, and the culture of the school becomes a sort of cutthroat culture, you might say.
Well, when you were in high school, was Harvard your goal?
Yes, Harvard was my goal. It was held up. I grew up outside New Haven, and so I was in the shadow of Yale. But the thing about growing up in New Haven is that Yale is sort of there and people are used to it and so on, whereas Harvard is sort of off in the distance and becomes a much more magnificent place to go.
So if you'd grown up near Cambridge, you might very well have wanted to go to Yale.
Exactly.
But there are differences between the schools, aren't there?
There definitely are. I mean, almost all elite schools now partake of the kind of careerist spirit that I saw at Harvard. But Harvard in particular, because of its position, because it's so famous, and because it's so good at attracting the most driven and the most competitive students, and at the same time the most famous professors and so on, it's sort of at the top of this pyramid of careerism and of achievement for achievement's sake.
And in the book you write about feeling alienated from your fellow students in high school. So did getting into Harvard somehow validate you?
Yes. No, there's definitely, and this is something I think that happens to any smart kid who goes through high school and feels somewhat alienated, as smart kids tend to do. And there comes a moment when everyone starts getting into college and suddenly you've gotten into Harvard and everyone realizes, oh, this is a really big deal. And, you know, Ross, he's going places or something, people might say. But, and the one thing I would say is that at Harvard, the best thing about Harvard was my classmates and the people I knew and so on. And what people say, the best Harvard education happens outside the classroom, that really is true. Now, it's partially true because of how poor the education is in some ways inside the classroom.
Which I want to get to in just a second. But, you know, the review of the book in the Wall Street Journal was written by a former classmate of yours.
It was.
And he gave you a bit of a slap on the wrist. He said, isn't this book a bit of a rush to judgment? He just got out of the school. Give it 5-10 years before you totally condemn it.
But I don't totally condemn it. As I've said, there are many good things about Harvard, and I think that one of the reasons I wrote the book was not just to critique the school, but also to provide just a sense of what elite college life is like for the students.
Okay, so you said that the classes themselves turn out to be disappointing. Now, Harvard has some of the most famous people teaching its classes, doesn't it?
It does.
Some of the most respected people, Nobel Prize winners.
Indeed, but often they're hired, in fact, almost always they're hired for the research they've done and the Nobel Prizes they've won and the great names that they bring with them and the prestige that they bring to the school. And this is true all across academia. Decisions about hiring and tenure are made on the basis of research rather than on the basis of someone's teaching ability and how they relate to the students, which means that the college is filled with brilliant professors, but often the brilliant professors are busy with other things, cut off from the rest of the students, and so on.
So you're relying on assistants and...
Yes.
...and beginning teachers. Does Harvard require the students to take a broad base of classes from the hard sciences to the humanities?
Harvard has a core curriculum, but it's a core only in name. What Harvard did in the 1970s was it responded to the critiques of the older cores and canons, which said, oh, you know, these are Eurocentric and filled with dead white males and so on, not by incorporating those insights and changing the curriculum and to make it more accommodating to other voices from outside Europe, but by simply throwing up its hands and saying, we can't teach, we can't decide what's important knowledge. So instead of teaching a specific set of knowledge to students, will teach what they call approaches to knowledge, which means, yes, you're required to take a history class, but it might be a history class on anything from the development of the medieval state to the Cuban Revolution and so on. And the same is true all across the sciences, across the arts and so on.
So they're teaching you how to think about history rather than teaching you about that history.
Exactly.
And what's wrong with that? In the end, doesn't that encourage you then to go ahead and do your own work? If you know now how to think about history, then you have more tools to approach it than if you just simply told, I want you to memorize a whole bunch of facts about the Napoleonic Wars.
Of course that's true, but I don't think it's an either-or proposition. There's no reason why you couldn't give students a broad basis of historical knowledge and also teach them the historical approach to knowledge. A history class that's well taught on, you know, the development of the Western state or something doesn't have to be a rote memorization of facts, and of course it shouldn't be. But at the same time, particularly for a university that claims to sort of have a specific set of things to impart to its students, it's important to actually impart a specific set of things. Otherwise, the university just becomes like a shopping mall, and students can sort of wander around and pick and choose, and some people come out with a great education, and a lot of people don't.
So it's kind of different than what you get at Columbia or the University of Chicago, which require an extensive amount of reading on what's usually called a canon. You're saying that Harvard has abandoned that approach?
Yes, and most schools have. Columbia and the University of Chicago are the last two sort of major elite institutions that still hew to some kind of a great books form of teaching. And frankly, I think that there's almost no question based on my own experience and the experience of my classmates that something like that would be preferable to the alternative. It's very hard to find any student at Harvard who likes the core curriculum and defends it. And in fact, one of the things that they're doing now is looking for ways to replace it because it's become clear that it's a system that's, if it was useful, it's outlived its usefulness.
Is Harvard being sidetracked by all of the controversy swirling around Larry Summers?
Absolutely. But a lot of that is, I have to say, Larry Summers' own fault. I mean, he has come in and made efforts in a lot of good directions, I think, both in terms of talking about reforming the curriculum and also in terms of increasing socioeconomic diversity at Harvard. I mean, one of the things about elite schools that surprised me after all the decades of talk about diversity and so on is how socioeconomically stratified they still are. And Summers has made noises in the direction of attempting to do something about that. But at the same time, as everyone has noticed, he's managed to pick fights that aren't really that important, and given the changes he's trying to make to the university, are ultimately, I think, just going to end up hamstringing his efforts.
Well, you describe yourself as a conservative. Is one of your objections that Harvard is a school for wealthy liberals, or has at least that kind of reputation?
Harvard is a school for wealthy liberals. I don't think there's anything per se wrong with that, given that, you know, wealthy liberals need to go to school just as much as anyone else. But I think for a school like Harvard that's aiming to be a school to educate the entire American elite, there ought to be more of an effort to encourage, in the book I talk about the lack of geographic diversity, for instance, and the fact that even the kids who come to Harvard from the Midwest tend to come from a few big cities and college towns and so on. And I think that you can see the impact of not being geographically and socioeconomically diverse in the composition of the elite professions that Harvard educates, you know, the law, the media, and so on. And I think this contributes in a way to the political polarization of our country. And it's not that this is the fault of liberals or the fault of conservatives. It's just a fact of life that most people in the media, for instance, tend to come from increasingly from elite schools. And so this sort of feeds the sense among conservatives that the media is biased against conservatives, and you see the same thing in the courts and the legal profession and so on. And I think there'd be less polarization in the country if elite schools did a better job of bringing people in from, I guess you'd say, red states.
Well, you write about your family as being fairly well off. Your father is a successful attorney. You attended a private day school in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Would you acknowledge that your privileged background helped you get into Harvard?
Absolutely. There's no question. And I think
conservative or not?
Conservative or not. No, I don't think that. There's certainly no political litmus test for admission to Harvard. It's just that the sort of thing that Harvard looks for in its students tend to be things that are associated with a certain kind of upper middle class childhood. And so, yes, Harvard is officially merit-based and admits the smartest students and so on, but the proxies it uses to measure merit tend to be things like the number of extracurriculars you had time to do, the exciting things you did in the summers, the strength of your school, and so on, which are things that correlate with intelligence, certainly, but they're also things that correlate with social class.
Well, if Harvard is selecting elite students, why is there a confluence of attendance problems and grade inflation, as you point out?
Well, for one thing, because of the sort of the culture of admissions to elite schools where people are constantly sort of fighting for places at the best schools and so on, and then once they get there attempting to fight for places at the best law schools or the best investment banks and so on, I think a sense develops among the students that academics are, rather than being important for their own sake, principally there to do well in order to get a good line, a good GPA on your resume, you might say. And so there's tremendous pressure from the students, I think, for grade inflation and, you know, people pushing their teaching assistants and their professors to bump their grades up just a little bit and so on, you know, and make that B+ and A- so that I can have the requisite GPA to get into law school. And at the same time, because of the reasons I discussed earlier, a lot of the people who are doing the grading at Harvard are harried, frazzled graduate students, you know, who would have better things to do than spend hours arguing with their students over the grades, and the easiest thing for them to do is say, all right, sure, you know, take the A-.
So these are kids who are the best and the brightest, but who don't always attend class and still get A's.
Yes.
Not because they do brilliantly on the test, but because there's so much pressure on the professors to give them the better marks. But this is also tied in with another aspect of Harvard and all the elite schools. It's about networking, isn't it? Isn't that why a lot of people want to go to a school like Harvard? Because the rest of their lives, whatever they go into, they'll be able to call upon an alum for help?
Yes. No, there's no question about that. And I think it's actually, at least in my own experience, it's less a question of being able to call on alums, people who are, you know, older than you and graduated 20 years ago. And it's more a question of being able to network with the people who are there, who are going to be moving up through the American elite with you.
Yeah, but you also write about a skinny dipping incident that involved William F. Buckley Jr. He sure wasn't one of your classmates.
This is true.
And that's using networking.
I was an intern at National Review, which is the finest conservative magazine in the country, and I have no doubt that however talented a journalist I was, it didn't hurt in getting that internship that I went to Harvard and so on. And yes, during the course of the internship, William F. Buckley Jr. took me and another intern out on our yacht, and we went swimming in Long Island Sound, and it was part of a sort of surreal summer experience that I write about in the book, but which, while it seemed surreal to me at the time, in hindsight, these are the sort of things that happen to Harvard people. For most of them, it's not swimming with William F. Buckley Jr.
Well, now I know why I went to Brooklyn College. The idea of skinny dipping with William F. Buckley isn't all that attractive to me. You also got your job at the Atlantic Monthly because the owner recruited from the Harvard Crimson. Wasn't recruiting from the school paper at Hunter College.
No, he decided that he wanted to open a branch of the Atlantic in Washington, D.C., and he wanted to hire young people to stock that office as researchers. And so it seemed like the most natural thing in the world to go up to Harvard and go to the Crimson and say, let me interview your, you know, best 10 or 15 people.
Now that you have written this book, what has been the reaction of your classmates? Have they said, thank you so much, you spoke for me, or do they feel that perhaps you were a bit unfair or that their experience was different than yours?
It's been a little of both. There have been people who have said, you know, thank you for expressing what we all felt about our mixture of love and disappointment that we experienced for Harvard. And then there have been people who have said, yeah, no, this was not what my experience was like at all. I was, for instance, extremely academically oriented, and that's inevitably going to happen. I was trying, and I hope I succeeded, to give a portrait of what the general culture of the school is like. And clearly it's a huge school, and many people have many different experiences there.
Well, now that you've picked on Harvard a little bit, will that jeopardize the networking, the connections? Will they still allow you in the Harvard Club?
They'll still allow me in the Harvard Club as long as I can pay. One of the great things about Harvard is that the most important thing that they look to for their alums is fundraising. And when you graduate from Harvard, first you hear the commencement speakers, and then the head of the Harvard Alumni Association gets up and gives a speech and says, "Welcome to our network of Harvard alumni. You'll be hearing from us frequently." And indeed I have, and I expect that in spite of the book that I will continue hearing from them for many years to come.
Ross Gregory Douthat, Douthat, will be reading tonight at 6 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble College Store at rival Columbia University, Lerner Hall, 2920 Broadway. His book, Privilege, Harvard and the Education of the Ruling Class, is published by Hyperion. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.